Welcome to the Butts in the Seats podcast, episode number 127.
Woo!
Yeah.
We are just trucking.
In case you're curious, episode 171 is going to be WrestleMania 17, so you got that many left.
Jesus. That's so weird, because I'm like, I just watched WrestleMania 17 for the Patreon.
Yes.
So, I get to watch it again! Yeah!
Yeah, it was weird being like, should I not have her watch it? But then everything feels incomplete. It was kind of an internal thing. I'm like, I don't know what to do about this one.
Well, I watched it, so it'll be up on the Patreon this week. But somehow we're still going on this pipeline. We still haven't taken a goddamn shot.
Yeah, Fall Brawl is our next one. So we're building the pay-per-view and building towards the shot.
That feels appropriate.
And I think we're also in a weird spot of we're at like episode 27 out of the Patreon too. So it's been a while over there. It's just
been a while. And like one of our, you know, pseudo New Year's resolutions was to like cut back on our drinking. So it has helped with that. Like we don't have this additional shot looming over us, but we've been kind of like ping-ponging between the mainline and the Patreon. So it might well have been like 12 episodes that we've recorded since we've actually taken a shot.
I think it's also an element of the build to New Blood Rising was a 5-week build plus we did ECW, and this is a 5-week build. And it's just, yeah, a lot of like building towards things without anything happening.
Yes, it really does feel like nothing happens.
I feel like I just summarized WCW right there.
You definitely summarized this episode.
Oh, I'm looking at this. Right after Fall Brawl will be the WrestleMania 41 episode.
Let's go!
But today we're talking about the August 28th, 2000 WCW Monday Nitro live from Las Cruces, New Mexico.
Nice.
So the ratings for this episode were actually up fairly substantially.
Hmm.
It did a 3.5. I think last week was like a 2.6.
Damn, that's actually pretty good for them.
Yeah, Raw was preempted.
Yeah, you did say in our last episode that the next couple of WCW episodes are going to be preempted. Yeah, okay. So I'm so glad WCW is doing something with that knowledge.
Yes, they got a 3.5. Raw, 2 hours later, still got a 4.9.
That's pretty low for Raw.
Well, when it's delayed 2 hours, that's an amazing score.
Still.
Because that's airing at 11 p.m. on the East Coast.
Oh,
so.
Damn. That's fair. And this is, again, before DVRs.
I also went back and, like, discovered something. Minus weeks where they're not actually head-to-head or preempted, whatever. We have only seen, like, in our reviewing, one Nitro that beat Raw.
Oh, wow.
And it was literally the first Nitro after Halloween Havoc.
Damn.
Back when we were doing, oh, it's the build to this. And
oh, wow. So we weren't even, like, really, we weren't really paying attention to the ratings then.
No, well, we also had the nice, helpful WWE Network little time code cues.
Yeah, we could skim. That was great. Damn, and with all of that conversation about how WCW beat Raw for so long, how long was it, Eric Bischoff? 83 weeks?
Yeah, honestly, the number varies. I don't know why he's locked into that, because I'm like,
that's the number he's going with. That is the name of his podcast. That podcast keeps auto-playing for me. I keep listening to it, like, without my own permission.
I think it's done.
I don't know, but old episodes of it, like whether or not like I'm listening back to our episode and it just autoplays into something else, or if I'm listening to like a how-to episode or an AE podcast episode, if that ends, it recently has been autoplaying into 83 Weeks with Eric Bischoff, like without my doing anything. And I don't know what Spotify God I have to pray to get that to stop happening.
So before we get into the actual episode, I have very few backstage notes and a fairly brief weather report, honestly.
What?
Yeah, Thunder was kind of shit this past week.
That's shocking.
The backstage notes, just to put in perspective the state of the two businesses, SummerSlam last night did 570,000 buys.
Hell yeah.
As a reminder, the last couple WCW pay-per-views, I think, would have been lucky to do 70,000 buys.
Yep.
So that's where we're at.
I mean, would you be paying for these WCW pay-per-views?
No. In WCW news, though, Scott Steiner apparently hurt his orbital bone last week when Goldberg like punched him.
His orbital bone?
Yes.
So that's his like skull, essentially?
Yeah,
his
that's like
socket?
The eye socket kind of. Okay. I know it's probably more, you know, specific than that, but yeah.
Eye socket.
More or less. I should note, it was during the segment. It wasn't Goldberg like fighting him backstage for real or anything. Backstage, Johnny Ace has been impressing people with his like producing and booking, and I'm like, no, someone stop him, please.
Oh, he's never going to stop.
Yeah, apparently I only have three of these notes. Jim Ross sent out a memo saying he has no meetings planned with any WWE wrestlers, and apparently Triple H and Steve Austin want DDP signed.
Oh.
I've always found that strange of like, oh, it's contract tampering. It's like, how?
Contract tampering to like want another guy signed?
To like talk to somebody signed to like WWE. Like, oh. That's a big thing right now with AEW and WWE, and I'm like, how does that work?
I don't know contract law.
Yeah.
There's got to be like a fine print or something.
Like, I get it in organized sports that like have a governing body, but the two of you don't.
But just like having a casual conversation even, like maybe WWE and WCW are in the same town and DDP meets Paul Levesque for a quick little drink or something at the hotel bar. I don't know. To me, that seems innocent.
Yeah, I don't know where the line is on this. Yeah. It's all stupid.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's it for the backstage notes. There's really not much this week. Let's go into our weather report, where there's always thunder. I really had a hard time putting any steam under that because this was a bad show.
Yeah. I did hear you chuckling when you were watching it, though. So there's at least that.
For some reason, Peacock has this listed a day earlier. I don't know why. I couldn't find any evidence of this airing on Tuesday.
I don't know.
I did find someone's like report from 2000. That was kind of interesting.
Oh, okay. They like watched it live or was there?
So this thunder took place in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Mm.
Goldberg was not at the show.
Okay.
Which, it's thunder or whatever.
Yeah.
He's from Tulsa.
Everybody's Goldberg like, is?
Yeah.
I thought he's from Texas.
I feel like I've heard him build from Atlanta, but...
I think I've heard him build from Atlanta, too.
Yeah, no, his hometown is Tulsa, Oklahoma, so people were like, oh, wow, nothing? Like, not like a little dark match? Just like, because they were in Wichita, Kansas, which apparently is, I think, like 2 hours from Tulsa. I don't know.
I don't
quote me on that drive math.
We're on the East Coast. Oh, speaking of East Coast, Maryland got a shout-out on SmackDown on Friday night. Did you see this?
I did not.
R-Truth was doing his stupid thing where he was like, oh, my tag partner is, you know, homegrown. They were in New Orleans. And he brings out Louisiana Knight. Ha 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 ha, LA, it's funny. Wade Barrett on commentary goes, he's not from Louisiana. He's from Maryland, for God's sake. He's not even from LA.
Oh, yeah. We went to SmackDown last week, by the way.
On Valentine's Day, we did go to SmackDown. That was fun.
I don't think we posted a photo, but yeah, we were there. It was fine. 3 hours is too long for SmackDown, especially when it's just crammed full of clearly ads and bullshit.
Yes. 100% that.
So the main through line of this thunder that I watched is everyone is trying to get Disco fired. Like, he has a match and it's like, I want his career on the line. No, his contract, I can't do that. And throughout the night, multiple people petition the cat for that match to be Disco's career on the line, including one Mean Gene offering the cat Viagra and a bunch of money.
Oh,
Viagra. The Filthy Animals come in at the end, like minus Disco, obviously, be like, can you? And he's like, nope. And then they go to leave, and there's a line of like 40 people, and they're like, all right, can we do it? No.
Oh my God. Why does everybody hate Disco all of a sudden?
I feel like that's not necessarily all of a sudden, but
I feel like they're being louder about it.
Yes. Crowbar had candy and flowers to give to Daphne, but she's like, oh, I met up with my secret admirer. He's like, oh yeah, these are from him.
Aww.
And we get to see the secret admirer, and it's like Crowbar's doppelganger.
No! Wait, the guy that she was with, is it the Thunder before?
Yes.
Okay. The guy that she's with in Nitro does not look like Crowbar. That's a different guy.
I could not see the guy.
I feel like he was bald. I feel like he looked more like Reno.
I don't know, but we'll have to check next Thunder and next week to see if it's the same guy or not. He does save Crowbar from a beatdown, so the guy is not meant to be a heel here, at least.
Oh, Crowbar. I would pick Crowbar.
Leia Meow is now with the Young Dragons, because let's just put all of them together.
Sure.
I'm quoting a likely backstage meeting.
She's Asian, right? She's Hawaiian. Isn't Leia Meow like Filipino?
It's all the same to them, and you know it.
I know it's all the same to them, but...
Just because her Isabu name was Kimono Wanalea, I don't know that makes her actually Hawaiian.
I think she's Filipino.
Do you really want to devote time to this?
No, I don't, but I want to know how racist they're being.
There was a production error of Mike Sanders doing an in-ring segment in his usual Natural Born Thrillers gear, and then he goes backstage 30 seconds later and talks to the cat in like a button-down shirt and a completely different outfit.
Oh, sure.
We got a weird sit-down interview with Medeja.
Medeja?
Like in her home. She's laying in bed in like kind of a sexy outfit, but a neck brace. Has a glass of something with her. I couldn't make out what it was. But like, it's half in character, half not. And Mike Tenay is just being a sexist dick.
Oh.
But it seems to be setting up a story where it's like, that's all she is, eye candy. Like, it's going to set up, oh, she becomes more than that. I don't think that happens, but...
Oh.
Yeah, it was a weird vibe here.
That sucks. I don't like that.
Norman Smiley retained the hardcore title in an I Quit match against M.I. Smooth. Norman could not immediately quit because he got chopped in the throat backstage by the Great Muta, so he couldn't speak.
Oh, sure, so he couldn't submit.
And M.I. Smooth tells Norman, say I quit. What did you say? And M.I. Smooth loses because he said the words, I quit. No, it's stupid. Do not smile at that.
That's, I like that.
That's fucking stupid.
I think I like that. I think whoever's writing Thunder is just leaning into the stupid, and I kind of vibe with that.
Tigress asked Tony Schiavone if he wants to get filthy after the show.
Does he want to get rowdy?
And
oh no, that's Emily lore. We don't need to go into that.
And just not really relevant, but Booker T and Vito bonded by playing stickball backstage. It was just kind of wholesome.
I love that. I fucking love Vito. He's the best.
And I don't know if it was intentional or not, but Booker was fucking whiffing at everything Vito was throwing, including he pulled out like a big ass softball and Booker whiffed on that too. I'm like, I don't think that was scripted. I think you're just bad at this.
That's sweet.
But yeah, that was Thunder. There was more stuff on there, but I mean, do you really care about the tag team match of Kevin Nash and Chuck Palumbo versus Booker and Vito?
Oh, God. Oh, they were playing stickball together to prep for their tag match. How cute.
And Jared just comes out, hits him with a guitar, and is like, oh, well, okay, that's it.
Nash and Palumbo as a tag team, I feel like that is in one of my circles of hell.
But with that, let's get into the main show.
Oh, God, do we have to?
Yeah. Well, we start with an NWO 2000 recap, and I'm like, NWO, no.
Why are we starting with the band is back together montage? What is this going to mean?
Admittedly, by the end of the show, I'm still asking that question.
I really think it's just to remind you that a certain person was also in cahoots with these people because of what happens at the end of the show.
Maybe.
I think that was the entire tie-in.
A limo pulls up. It's Scott Steiner, Kevin Nash, Jeff Jarrett, and Vince Russo. I think they actually say the band is back together here. I'm like, oh, fuck.
The band's back together.
We don't open with them, though. Instead, we open with Vampiro and the Insane Clown Posse with the Great Muta. Quick, Emily, name the two members of the Insane Clown Posse.
God damn it. You quizzed me on this during the episode. Jay Cool?
You're right on the J.
J Smooth.
I really thought you were going to say J Money.
No. Oh, I don't remember.
Violent J.
Violent J.
And do you remember the other one at all?
God, no.
It's a three-word name.
I think that's what I thought J Cool was.
Blank to blank.
Scotty Too Hotty.
Shaggy Too Dope.
Shaggy Too Dope, yes. Ask me again next week, I won't remember.
They are facing three count, and Tony Schiavone and Mark Madden check in. Scott Hudson's wife is giving birth, so he's not here tonight.
Congratulations.
And instead, we get the Great Muta joining commentary.
Listen, for a second, I hated this.
And then you loved it.
I fucking loved it. It's exactly what I wanted it to be.
You want to just talk about that now? Because I don't have a spot in the match to talk about it.
So Muta gets on commentary, and you know when another person joins commentary, they're either taking over and doing far too much, or they just sit silently. And sometimes that's okay. We don't need to hear another voice, usually. They throw to Muta on commentary, and he very deeply and in character speaks very quick Japanese. I'm not going to try to mimic it. Because,
yeah, to the point where we weren't even sure if it was Japanese.
I couldn't discern words. And then again, I don't speak Japanese, so I don't know. But it was just still so in character. It sounded like he was dubbing over something. And it was just like, perfect.
And at one point he yells, and Mark Madden goes, let me translate. Ah.
Oh, that was the only good moment of Mark Madden.
I know. I think we were saying during that, I'm like, the problem with Mark Madden is he bats 10%. And I mean that as a batting average. Like, it's 0.10.
0.010.
But that 10% is really fucking funny.
Oh, it's so good. The other 90% is just offensive and bad.
Oh, no. I'm saying 990%.
That, too.
Yeah.
Also, it's just offensive, bad, and racist, usually. Or sexist.
Three count. All the above. Three count dancing are laid out. Three count hits dives back in and then vault onto the floor onto the Dark Carnival. Three count hit a double suplex and assisted sit out facebuster. The Insane Clown Posse are sent out to the floor and Vampiro just kind of stops on an Irish whip. So three count just hit a double suplex again. I don't really know what happened there.
Yeah, I don't know.
Vampiro hits a nail in the coffin on Shannon Moore. Violent J hits a Samoan drop. And Shaggy Two Dope hits a diving leg drop for a way too quick win from the Dark Carnival.
Yeah, that ending did come very quickly. But obviously that's not the end of the segment because we have to have chaos.
Post-match Tank Abbott comes out and just attacks three count. Because, sure, let's dissolve that. The Dark Carnival then come back in to attack Tank. And then three count join the beatdown. So it's a 7-on-1 beatdown.
Yeah, so Tank is pissed that three count lost.
He's also pissed at them just because he's getting, you know, an ego on him and sure. The thing. Yeah. I'm like, okay, but I feel like he would be the heel here. And I don't know. We didn't get Dale Torborg coming out to make the save because.
Dale Torborg.
But yeah, he's here to make the save because reasons.
Sure.
He is still the demon here, I should note. It's not just Dale.
But he's just Dale. Let's be real.
Everyone does the laziest brawl I've seen in a good while until the Great Muta comes in and misses the demon. And then we get Sting coming out, and he takes everyone out with a baseball bat, and Sting, Tank Abbott, and the demon stand tall. Because why not?
One of these men continues on to be a character next week.
Yes, as has been teased often.
Thank God.
This is the final appearance for us of the demon Dale Torborg and Tank Abbott.
Woo!
I think the demon still has a couple matches on like Thunder and Saturday Night and a World or whatever.
Fuck you,
other
Tank.
Shows, but
get fucked, Tank.
Yeah, Tank Abbott's gone.
Get out of here. Hell yeah. If he comes back, I'm going to cry on camera. I know this is an audio podcast. I'm going to film myself talking and crying and post it.
We're going to do a video episode just for that.
Just to watch me cry.
Do these guys deserve a little in memoriam?
I mean, kind of. Unfortunately, yeah. We talked about both of them enough.
Yeah. They have become staples of our show.
Yes. And our, like, household lore, too, it feels.
So who do you want to start with?
Let's start with Dale.
Dale. As a reminder, he was not the first demon.
No, but let's talk about just, like, the character demon as a whole. Like, that first real visual of the coffin, the kiss demon.
Yes.
Like, let's talk about that from there on.
Yes, let's talk about Bryan Adams.
Sure.
Yeah, he just disappeared and then came back as a different guy. And then he got his special not-a-main-event. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. It was in an episode that had, like, two main events, technically. Or maybe it was three. I don't remember.
It was a pay-per-view. I don't remember who he even faced, but it was... He contractually had to have a pay-per-view main event. And they went, here's our special main event, third on the card.
Yes, yes. Because it was billed as a main event, but it was like half an hour into the show.
Yep. They disappeared for a while and came back. And then the demon was like an alternate personality.
Remember his whole thing with Asia? His fiance, Asia?
Yeah, she just vanished.
She did. This isn't like you, Dale. You aren't this man. Don't let the symbiote become you.
Yeah, they really wanted him to be Venom.
He really was. They were really trying to make him Venom.
Yeah, I just also him just looking like a bitch repeatedly where Norman Smiley even came out and like did the gimmick better than him. I'm going to miss Dale, but the show is better off with him not on it.
Yes, 100%. The Dark Carnival is already overcrowded as it is. We don't need Dale to be part of this.
Which brings us to Tank Abbott.
Oh, Tank. Back to his humble beginnings, beating up audience members.
Yeah, I mean, he also showed up, did some stuff, and then disappeared for a while. Because like, he was with like Rick Steiner for a little bit, and then just kind of vanished. And thinking that he came back and was with Rick again.
Was he with Rick more than once?
I think so. Remember, he showed up as like a ref for a match with Rick Steiner, and then...
Oh my god, all I remember is he started out just gunning after Goldberg, and when Goldberg wasn't coming out because he wasn't there, he was just beating up audience members.
That's even later, because...
Oh, is it really?
He did a whole thing like with Sid, where he got a world title shot, where Tank Abbott is also the reason why Vince Russo kind of got fired the first time, if you remember or not.
I don't.
After Bret Hart vacated the title due to injury... Mm-hmm. Russo's idea was, let's put the title on Tank Abbott.
Oh, Vincent.
Yeah.
That was never a good idea.
So then they put it on Benoit, and then Benoit left, and then they put it on Sid, and Tank's undefeated streak came to an end when Sid beat him, which was weird because they were kind of building up the Goldberg thing. Mm. And he was like, wait, why did you have him lose there if... He also faced David Arquette in a world title match. Like,
oh, God, yeah.
He's done so much random bullshit, and I didn't take him seriously through any of it.
Any of it.
Yeah.
Any of it. So when he kind of joined up with 3 Count, we were like, oh, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
Because he just kind of came on with 3 Count as the bumbling idiot fan turned manager turned disgruntled wannabe.
Right after the reboot, you gave him worst bit 3 weeks in a row for just his general talking and segments and beating up people. He beat up Mark Madden. That was kind of nice, but...
Yeah.
And that's all to say nothing of the fucking Skins match, but I think we've said enough about that. Yeah, Tank Abbott, it just... I kind of got it, but I don't know why you stuck with it.
That's the thing. I don't think I ever really got it. I think it was just because he was an MMA fighter, right?
Yes, and his whole thing was he had like big knockouts, but he lost a lot too. So. Oh,
so he wasn't even a good MMA fighter. Yeah. We're really not losing much with Tank Abbott is the moral of the story. We're not losing much with Tank. We're not losing much with Dale. Good riddance. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I just have a hunch that Tank Abbott is what Vince Russo wanted to do with Butterbean. And just that contract didn't end up working out because politics and bullshit.
The politics and the bullshit?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll say I'll kind of miss Dale just for the lulls, but Tank Abbott can get fucked.
There were no lulls with Tank. That's the difference. Dale gave us a little bit of joy every once in a while. Tank just
I don't think for
die.
The right reasons, but
no,
yes.
No, he was a joke, but Tank was just, oh, fuck, we got to watch a Tank match.
I did kind of like him with 3 Count, but...
I didn't. I never thought it was charming.
They didn't flesh it out enough down the stretch to really be a full story.
No.
But yeah, I think we're done with them. Cheers to Dale and Tank.
I'll clink my Celsius with your soda. Let's go.
Let's move on. Backstage, the fake NWO and the Natural Born Thrillers are headed towards the ring. We see the Nitro Girls under a cash roll GTX ad, and Russo brings everyone out.
I called them the gaggle of dweebs. I don't know why that was what I wrote.
Which group?
The band with the Natural Born Thrillers. They're just the gaggle of dweebs.
Russo has a mic, says that Nash, Steiner, and Jeff Jarrett are the elite group in WCW. And I'm like, weren't they the NWO Elite? Or I think that's been renamed.
I can't
in
remember
hindsight.
I thought it was just black and white.
Russo says the band is back together and it's going to be New York ugly for Goldberg.
Oh, sure. Did you know that Vince Russo is from New York? I had no ideas.
He hands the mic off to the Chosen One. He does his usual promo and then asks the crowd to think anyone can stop the three of us. Jared says Nash is back on the team and then calls out Mike Awesome and just like kind of like books him versus Awesome for a match at Fall Brawl. Like, I have the stroke so I can do this. I'm like, oh, okay.
He's got stroke.
Oh, that match will be a bunkhouse brawl, which is just a street fight.
I hate the term bunkhouse brawl. It's stupid. It doesn't mean anything.
Steiner grabs a mic, says no one puts his hands on his freaks, and he got his revenge last week. He calls Bethberg ugly and challenges Goldberg to a match at Fall Brawl.
Fall Brawl.
Notably, he doesn't book it. He just challenges.
Yeah, it was just a challenge. And Russo says that he gave Bill Goldberg an easy out with this contract signing. We talked about this in our last episode when this contract came up. Like, if Goldberg was actually given a real out, if this was a real contract, that man would have taken it and run for the fucking hills.
It's then Kevin Nash's turn. He says a couple of years ago, he decided to call himself Big Sexy, what he should have called himself, the Puppet Master.
Ooh, got him.
Every couple of months, he sucks people in to buy his merch, but now that it's all sold out, it's time to be a heel again.
Great.
I'll remember that when you turn face in a couple months.
Yeah, there's nothing that they're saying in this matters.
Nash gets interrupted by Goldberg chants, but instead he challenges Booker T to a match at Fall Brawl. Russo says Nash won't become champion at Fall Brawl.
Because he's going to become champion today.
Yeah.
Saw that come from a mile away as soon as they started talking about that.
So it's me, Booker versus Nash with Jeff Jarrett as the special ref and Scott Steiner as the enforcer.
Once again, an overbooked match.
Booker comes out to the stage, tells Russo to shut the hell up, tells everyone in the ring to save the drama for yo mama.
We debated doing a Who's That Pokemon for Booker T because we just haven't done one in a while. I do have one.
Who do you have?
Torracat.
Is that the evolved form of Litleo?
I don't know.
I think it is. Sorry, it is the evolved form of Litten, not Litleo.
Ha.
Yes, I the same one, by the way.
Okay. Who's that Pokemon? It's Litleo's evolution, Torracat.
No other one.
God damn it.
Yeah, it's not quite in Cineroar here. Booker says Russo can decide who gets their ass whooped tonight. And I'm like, don't you have a match with Kevin Nash? They just booked that.
Yeah.
Russo just kind of lures Booker to the ring. And I'm like, Booker's about to go with it too, but he's stopped by the cat. The cat says Russo can't book any matches. And I'm like, what?
Russo is like the owner, right? Like he's the boss.
He's the writer.
Sorry, I forgot writers. The pen is mightier than the sword.
So he joins Booker towards the ring. Cat tells Russo to get his three bitches out of the ring, and Booker and the cat get beat down. The Filthy Animals come out to what might be a new theme, might be the same one from last week. Not sure. They try to make the save. They get beat down by the non-NWO, the Natural Born Thrillers. The heels go to leave, and on the Tron, we see Goldberg somewhere in the desert digging a hole.
Digging a grave.
He says he's coming for Russo and his goons, and he's going to basically bury Russo alive.
Cool. Down.
So I'm like, is Booker and Nash happening or no? Because the cat said it's not, but...
It seems like it is.
Yeah. Back from commercial, the cat is loaded into an ambulance.
So when did the cat get knocked out to the point of needing to get into an ambulance?
Just during that beatdown.
Okay, there was just... Okay, because I didn't actually see him, like, get laid out
necessarily. No, just general beatdown.
So him getting put into the ambulance, I'm like, sure?
It's basically, let's get him out of the building so we can do heel shenanigans later.
Yeah, I figured, but, like, it was not clear.
Elsewhere, Vince Russo tells the band to stay by his side. Nash leaves to get ready for his match. Steiner leaves, and Jeff Jarrett is annoyed. He doesn't get the title shot, and he leaves. Keep that in mind, because that's a fucking passing line. They don't put any emphasis on it. And that is the crux of a match later.
Yes.
Goldberg then calls Russo, saying he's on his way to the arena.
Oh, no. Russo is just so nervous now.
So we've been to our second match tonight.
God, we've done so much already. There's been so much chaos already. And then this is only the second match. Strap the fuck in, guys.
I saw someone note on this episode. The opening two segments had a grand total of 28 different people.
28?
Think about it. Natural Born Thrillers, non-NWO, Russo, Booker and the Cat, Filthy Animals, Dark Carnival, Three Count, Tank Abbott, Demon and Sting.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
This show is so overbooked.
And let's add three more, because our next match is a triple threat match.
Strap in.
It's Paisley versus Tigress versus Major Guns. And I don't think I can get through this fucking match.
Do you want me to do it?
My first thought is, I'm sorry, what? Yeah, Emily, go ahead.
So, this is probably the worst women's match I've ever seen.
It's hard to beat.
It's really hard to beat. So it starts with the three women in the ring kind of looking at each other. Paisley kicks Guns in the back. Like, well, kind of in like a weird little hoppy back thing.
Yeah, it's meant to be a sneak attack.
Paisley leaves the ring. Now she's on the apron. In the ring, Tigress just elbows Major Guns. Major Guns falls to the ground. Roll up, pin, win. The end. Right? Wrong.
I'd say it's a jackknife pin, but... You know, it's okay.
They're not doing real moves, Nick. So the ref calls 1, 2, 3, call for the bell. Literally, pin, call for the bell.
Dave Penzer announces the winner.
Tigress has announced the winner. The audience boos, obviously. But the ref then is like, just kidding. That was only a two count.
Keep going.
We got to keep the match going. Keep going. All three of the girls again are in the ring like, huh? So let's just like quickly cobble something together. They're all very, very confused at this point. So essentially Paisley and Tigress just double team on Major Guns.
Yeah, they just hit some stomps.
And then that's it. And then, and then that's not just it. They just cut away. They're just like, never mind.
They're like, oh, Paisley's walking out.
Oh, yeah, I forgot Paisley walked out.
But she doesn't, because it's over.
It just ends.
Which just cuts back to Major Guns in the ring, and Tigress isn't there, so I guess she's also leaving.
I feel like I called that wrong, but that was every beat of this match I said.
I don't even know what the fuck happened here. I'm like, was it a botch, or just, are they all that bad?
I think it was a botch. I think it was a botch on the side of the referee.
Sorry, that's not my note. I told you my note. Was it a botch or just the best they could do?
Oh, God.
Because I'm concerned it's number two.
I'm going to say, for the benefit of the doubt, this was a botch on the ref's part, where he didn't realize there was more to the match. Fair, because a woman's match getting more than 10 seconds? Shocking. Who could ever expect that? So we did call for the bell. Dave Penzer also was like, yeah, probably. Might as well be done. And then all the girls were like, wait, no, we're not done yet. And then they were confused at the restart. And then it all just fell off the rails.
And Major Guns should have been surprised about them teaming up, because the reason this match is happening is Tigress helped Paisley beat Major Guns on Thunder.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So there was lore.
There was lore. There was a backstory. This has to be the worst women's match I've ever seen. And not for their lack of trying.
I saw it described as the worst 20 seconds of professional wrestling I've ever seen.
20 seconds. I think 20 seconds is giving it too much time, honestly. It was the most confusing 20 seconds, that's for sure.
Because Paisley also just really, I'd say winds up for that kick, but just really tries to like balance for the kick.
I don't know if she was trying to balance or if she realized she wound up for it too early and was trying to stall.
Yeah, or like Major Guns was supposed to turn around and didn't.
Yeah, I think it was a stalling. I don't think it was a balance thing. Yeah.
Also, Paisley was just fine losing here.
Yeah. This was fucking bonkers.
Spoilers for worst bit. I think it's gotta
be this. I really don't think it's on the women for making this the worst thing. I really think it's on the, like, the production side of it that makes this the worst.
But it was fucking Ginger Ref, who we note sucks. So.
Yes, he does suck. But really, I think the women, like you said, I think they tried their best.
That makes it worse.
I think they were trying their hardest.
Let's go backstage. Ugh. The Natural Born Thrillers harass Rey Mysterio. The Filthy Animals pepper spray them and take them out. I don't even know why they were bothered to harass them, considering they were brawling earlier, so I figure it's just hands on sight.
You think, yeah.
So, yeah, all security for Russo has been taken out.
Dun dun dun. Conan does say something sassy before he leaves the room, but I forgot to take a note of
something
it.
Something like, you don't have any backup, you're green goons or whatever.
He said something sassy.
Back from commercial, Jeff Jarrett welcomes a literal pickup truck full of guitars.
Full of guitars.
The entire back bed
overflowing. Mound of acoustic guitars.
I'm going to read my next note verbatim. We then get Pamela with, oh fucking no, leisure suit Mike Awesome.
Leisure suit? Is that what you're going to call this?
Well, he doesn't quite have the gimmick yet, but it's Mike Awesome in a 70s leisure suit. He's going to get the gimmick on the next Thunder, I think.
Pamela does comment on his retro outfit.
Yes, might as well just rip the Band-Aid partially off now. We are on the cusp of that 70s guy, Mike Awesome.
Yay.
Which, I don't know this for sure, but something about the fact that he's about to become that 70s guy makes me think he's not actually going to have a match with Jarrett at Fall Brawl.
Well,
I think that gimmick is below Jeff Jarrett's stature.
Probably. I almost think that I preferred him as the fat chick Thriller.
During his match later, he does just come out as Mike Awesome. So I'm like, all right, we get one more.
Yeah, and what match is that later?
We'll get to that in a second. Because Awesome also gets some like 70s music under his promo here. Mm-hmm. And he cuts a fairly straightforward promo. I was like, okay, like no weird 70s shit yet.
Nah.
He challenges Rick Steiner to a bunkhouse match. Not a bunkhouse brawl, a bunkhouse match.
More like a funkhouse match. Get it? Because 70s?
And just
laugh at my joke.
Just to add to the state of my sanity, we go from that and just hear chronic. Oh, I'm like, fuck God. Me.
We cannot catch a break right now.
Yes, our next match, it is Chronic versus the Doge Boys. The Harris Brothers.
Sorry.
I thought it was a cage. It's actually a House of Pain match.
So it's not a cage. But it's definitely a cage.
Yes, it's a cage. Good. Lock them up. Emily, do you have any notes in this match? I have three, and one of them is the finish.
I took note of the mounted camera in the not a cage cage. That's a different angle that we've never seen before.
Everyone just brawls. Adam Full Nelson slams one of the Harris Boys and then slams him into the cage, and the cage just kind of like breaks away almost.
So I panic in that moment because I'm like, oh my God, the cage was never actually secured. This is like a safety problem, right? Like they went full power into this. No, that was the point?
Yes.
That was the goal.
Because then everybody just goes to the outside.
So it's not a cage.
And a fan like kind of gets grabbed by one of the Harris Brothers. So security just breaks up the shit brawl. That's it.
The match gets DQ'd.
You know, I think I may have jumped the gun in saying the women's triple threat was the worst bit. Because what the fuck was this?
So we talk sometimes about the fact that WCW is hemorrhaging money. They're not bringing in viewership. They're losing money left, right, and center. They spent money, time, resources, and manpower on setting up this fucking cage, on shipping this cage, on getting this cage into a truck and then out of that truck and then into this arena and doing this for this shit, for this 30-second not a match cage match. And we're wondering why this company failed. It's little shit like this. It's little shit of like, why the fuck did you spend money on this cage? This is the kind of shit that adds up, though.
Yeah, and it just seems like they booked this and went, oh, wait, we don't want to actually do the match. We want to save it for Fall Brawl, but we already said we're going to do it, so let's just not.
Was this match advertised?
I think they mentioned it last week. I think. I could be wrong in that.
I don't know that they did. But, like, even if they had, oh, no, WCW going back on their word on a match, that's never been done before.
Yeah, I feel like you really could have gotten away with not doing Chronic versus the Harris
Brothers. Uh-huh. No one would have been any way, shape, or form where they've been disappointed.
I feel like we could have just not even reviewed it and just moved on. We
went, no one would have caught us. No one would have tweeted and be like, sorry, you missed a match. Like, no. This was not a match. The second that cage swung open like a fucking doggy door, it was over.
Yeah, it didn't even break in a cool way.
It swung.
It just looked like someone didn't do their job.
Literally, that's why I was so panicked. I honestly thought that somebody forgot to secure that portion of the cage. Someone could have gotten hurt. But no, that was the fucking plan.
Oh, let's move on. We get Lance Storm and Elix Skipper heading to the ring as we go to commercial. They come out and Storm challenges, I guess, anybody in the Misfits in action to a prisoner of war match. Emily, what does that mean?
It means whoever wins in this match gets to kidnap one of, gets to imprison?
I guess.
One of the other team's members.
Yes.
So if MIA wins, they get to imprison Elix Skipper or Lance Storm. If Team Canada wins, they get to kidnap somebody from MIA. Or imprison. Whatever word we're using.
Yeah.
Take them away.
Which, the numbers of this should really give away who's going to win. Because
yes.
If Lance Storm loses, he's literally just himself.
Right.
So the MIA come out. General Rection says MIA now stands for Made in America.
Got him.
He agrees to the match, but just kind of decides it'll be a tables match against Sergeant AWOL. So we have Lance Storm versus the Wall, brother.
That's the Wall, brother.
In a prisoner of war tables match.
Again, too many things going on here.
AWOL hits a spine buster and a back elbow. He tries for a choke slam on the floor, but Storm gets out, runs into a big boot. Storm then tries to suplex AWOL from the apron, but AWOL counters, and Elix Skipper hits AWOL with a Canadian flag. Lance Storm hits a springboard dropkick, sending Sergeant AWOL through the table, giving Lance Storm the win.
Woo!
And they go to check on Sergeant AWOL, and we paused at the most I'm about to kidnap a woman stance I've ever seen in a human from Lance Storm.
It was so, like, we make jokes about kidnapping on this show all the time.
In the context of the show.
I know. This Nitro lends itself to kidnapping women a lot. I don't understand it either. It happens, okay?
It fits for so.
Fucking Ms. Elizabeth, poor woman. This was just the most perfect moment. She looked so grabbable in the screenshot. And Lance Storm was just so, I don't. It was like a fucking Looney Tunes shot. I don't know. Yeah. There was something cartoon about this. Anyway, so, the match happened.
Yeah, Storm takes Major Guns prisoner, and that's that.
Can we talk about AWOL's fucking mohawk?
I feel like he's had that.
No, I don't think so. Feel like I would have said something about it before.
Maybe I saw it on Thunder.
Maybe. You might have seen it on Thunder. We can also talk about the fact that Nick forgot Hugh Morris's gimmick name.
What do you call it? Hugh G. Morris.
Hugh G. Morris. We're losing our minds a little bit in this episode watch. I don't know if it's coming through.
Yeah. This match was fine, but
was it?
It just was a match. I mean,
it was so quick. These matches are like 90 seconds max, all of these.
So Team Canada may now have a third member. We'll see what happens here.
Great.
Backstage, Pamela Paulshock is with Sting. Apparently the Great Muta has challenged Sting to a match. We get Tony Schiavone's audio accidentally leaking through for a second here.
Oh, was it Tony Schiavone?
I think so. And yeah, Sting agrees. It's showtime. Yada,
it's showtime, folks.
Let's go to Rick Steiner versus Mike Awesome in a bunkhouse match.
Bunkhouse something. A fight.
Tony plugs an England tour in November. They're going to tape some Nitro over there. I'm like, all right, See how it goes.
Again, hemorrhaging money.
Rick Sutter comes out, does his usual, if you don't like me, bite me promo. Like, just autopilot here.
Come get some.
Mike Awesome just comes out as Mike Awesome. Steiner catches Awesome in an overhead suplex. Awesome hits a big boot and dives over the top rope to the floor on top of Steiner. Awesome grabs a table, sets it up in the corner of the ring, tries for an Awesome bomb, but Jeff Jarrett runs out, hits Mike Awesome with a pipe. Rick Steiner German suplexes Awesome through the table and pins him.
Again, very quick. This is less offensive, I feel.
But, like, why are we even doing matches if you don't care about them?
Because they have to justify this as a wrestling show. That's the only reason.
Yeah, this is it for Mike Awesome's credibility for a little while. He'll kind of get it back towards the end, but
I feel like this episode so far is just like a moratorium on all the stuff that's like falling apart.
Yeah.
We've lost two wrestlers. One's about to get a terrible gimmick. Nothing matters. Everything is bad.
Well, no.
WCW.
What this episode is it is episode 3 of 5 in a 5-week build, and they go, I don't fucking care.
Nothing's going to happen until the go home, if that.
Well, we'll get to that later.
Yeah.
Our next match, not our main event, it is Kevin Nash versus Booker T for the WCW title.
Yeah, riddle me fucking why this isn't the main event.
I don't even know why. Vince Russo, Jeff Jarrett, and Scott Steiner come out together at the start. Russo gets on commentary and says he's ready for a New York screw job.
Great.
We see a graphic for Fall Brawl of Kevin Nash versus Booker T. And Russo's like, oh, that graphic's going to have the belt on the other guy's shoulder. So that match is still going to happen. Why would you still give Booker a world title shot if he loses here?
What's happening?
Match starts. Nash hits Booker as Jeff Jarrett tells Steiner to get out of the ring. Steiner keeps wanting to cheat, but Jeff Jarrett stops him. And it's like, Jeff Jarrett's calling it down the middle. And Russo's losing his mind. And they have to point out, well, he had that one line earlier about not being happy that he wasn't getting the title shot. And you're going to regret making him the ref. That is the crux of this whole match. And they have not mentioned it.
No.
Since then.
Not at all. Not even a little bit.
Jarrett stops interference from Russo, and Booker kicks the top rope into Nash's crotch, getting back in the ring. Booker hits a side slam, hits 10 punches in the corner. Nash gets a boot up in the corner, and it's a big left arm clothesline. Jeff Jarrett does a normal pin count, and Nash is pissed. He's like, what the fuck, dude?
Nash is pissed. Russo's on commentary going, is he out of his fucking mind? He's going to lose his job. How dare he call it down the middle? How dare he do his job well?
Now, based on the finish of this match, why? Why even bother?
Nick.
Why bother doing a regular count here? Swerve! Jeff Jarrett's going to turn and...
You're such a fool!
Sorry. Turn, it doesn't actually have enough substance. Or the word turn has too much substance. He hits Booker T later. So why are we even doing this song and dance?
I can't believe you fell for it. Of course, Jarrett's my guy. He's never gonna stray from me. I got you, fools. You can't believe you fell for it. That's why.
Yeah.
They want to make the audience feel stupid.
Jarrett scolds Steiner for hitting Booker as Nash hits a big boot and goes for the pin, but Jarrett's too busy kicking out Scott Steiner, so he would have won there, but Jarrett didn't see it. Nash works Booker over in the corner. Jarrett tells Nash to let him out. And I'm like, oh, let him out of the corner. Tell Kevin Nash to not be in the corner.
Yeah.
I don't see that happening.
How dare you?
Booker hits a standing sidekick and ducks a low blow, hits a Harlem sidekick. Booker then hits a scissor kick and a spin-a-rooney, and something I found kind of funny. As he's doing that, Jarrett's on the mat, like, ready to count a pin. It's like, oh, nope, never mind.
Well,
Booker hits a missile dropkick and then knocks a returning Scott Steiner off the apron. Booker hits a kind of shitty bookend, and Jeff Jarrett hits Booker with a guitar. Swerve, I guess. The guy who I thought was aligned with Vince Russo and Kevin Nash at the start of this match turned out to be aligned with the exact guys I thought he was.
I can't believe you thought that Jarrett would ever not be with Russo. I can't believe you. How dare?
I know. It was a really rough 3 minutes there where I was really concerned where Jeff Jarrett's loyalties lied.
No, Russo loves to do this shit where he tricks the audience. How dare he have an intelligent audience? No, his audience needs to be full of idiots and fools that he can easily manipulate and trick. This is just proof that he's just like flexing his stupid power muscle.
Yeah. I think I had the line last week. If a swerve happens in the woods and no one's watching, did it really work?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Honestly, it would have been more interesting if Jeff Jarrett actually did swerve.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, the match is not over. Nash then takes off the tank top he's been wrestling and then separately drops the straps to get him out. He hits a jackknife and pins Booker to win the WCW title. Did you catch Tony Schiavone's line as that was happening?
No.
This is almost anticlimactic.
He said that?
Yes. Woof. I don't know that he meant to say it out loud, but...
Yikes.
I believe this is WCW World Title Change number 20 on the year.
Oh my God.
What was the point?
Fuck you, Booker.
Yeah.
That's the point.
And now Booker gets a world title shot at the pay-per-view, and I don't get why.
Fuck you, Booker.
Fuck you, Booker, but you're still getting the thing you want.
Yeah. It's really, the point was for Vince Russo and the what did I call it, the gaggle of dweebs, to just flex their power. That was the reason. In case you forgot that Russo's in charge.
This episode fucking sucks, man.
Yeah, dude!
I'm like really feeling it. I'm like, oh, yeah, wow.
Yeah, dude!
Like, sorry, everybody. This one just was a real drag.
I've been saying that all morning. Like, all morning. Nick's like, oh, don't forget we gotta record. I'm like, I don't want to fucking record this episode. This is why.
Yeah, I got so much more joy just from watching Booker T and Vito play stickball.
Oh, God.
You didn't even get to watch that.
I didn't. Now I kind of want to.
Back from commercial, Tony Schiavone just seems fully over it as him and Mark Madden recap the last match. Oh, yeah. Mark Madden was an annoying prick throughout the whole last match, too.
I wasn't listening to commentary, if I'm honest. I stopped listening to commentary after Mark Madden had that one zinger at the beginning of the show.
Backstage, we see the celebration, and Russo says it's time to take care of Goldberg. Nash leaves, noting, I'm going to go eat a little Korean. Talking about one of the Nitro girls he's dating.
Ew.
Elsewhere, Booker just goes to leave the arena because he's like, fuck this.
Yeah, I don't blame him.
Goldberg arrives, tells him not to leave.
And he listens.
Yeah. Oh, also, I guess we kind of missed during the last match. Everyone was chanting for Goldberg because it seemed like a clear setup to, hey, the big hero is going to come save the day.
Yeah. No, fuck you. Ugh, this whole episode really is just a fuck you.
Yeah. We then get Shane Douglas and Tori Wilson somewhere in like the upper deck of the crowd.
Yeah, this was kind of like a change of scenery that I appreciated.
Douglas puts himself over and tells Kidman he now knows what it's like to be franchised. Which Mark Madden goes, and so does Tori. That's two different things, Mark Madden.
But he calls them both being franchised. So franchised is both having sex and getting beat.
Is it like Buffalo, where if you say it seven times, it's a sentence?
I think it's nine, but yeah, something like that.
Franchise, Buffalo, franchise,
Buffalo,
franchise.
Buffalo, 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 Buffalo.
Shane Douglas challenges Billy Kidman to a scaffold match at Fall Brawl and does his that's a fact jackass line that does not work, Shane Douglas.
No, so the thing with this, when he starts to do this little sign off, the whole that's a fact jackass, he says that's a fact three or four times
yes,
in a row.
Yes, it's a lot.
And as he's continuing to say it, Tori just vanishes. She exits stage left. He goes, that's a fact. That's a fact. Tori's gone. That's a fact. That's a fact. Jackass. And I was like, that's kind of strange. Now Tori's gone. What the fuck's that about?
I don't get why, but Crowbar is here and attacks Shane Douglas.
Listen, are you mad?
Well, I just say, I don't know why in kayfabe. I know why in reality. Yeah, Crowbar almost sends Douglas over the barricade, but he gets distracted by something. And it turns out to be Daphne and her new guy, who I don't have a name for yet. Douglas then picks up Crowbar and slams him off the balcony through some tables, like a decent bit on the floor below.
You got a big bump, Crowbar's gonna take it.
Yeah, I was like, there might have been a pad under one of the tables, but I was like, this didn't look super safe.
But he did it, and he did it well. He took it well.
Because it wasn't a double stack. It was a group of tables, like a big merch stand, but still, like, it was one level. And I'm like, oh, God, okay. It was an impressive spot. And like, credit to Crowbar. Douglas then goes to storm Crowbar and just pushes Daphne over. I'm like,
yikes.
So where the fuck is this new guy? He fought off Reno. Like, come on. Douglas and Tori then go into the ring and grab the mic again. And he just talks more about like, oh, I'm so great. I'll challenge anyone in the building. Goldberg's music hits and Shane Douglas immediately cowers. Goldberg hits a spear and is somehow bleeding from his eye. This will be mildly important later.
Yeah, it seems like he caught it on like his watch or something.
His belt or something, yeah.
I couldn't figure out. We backed it up to see what he might have caught it on. I couldn't find it.
Yeah, it was a weird angle, but he's gushing pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where they don't give him a close-up here.
No, they like actively keep it away.
Goldberg gets a jackhammer, grabs a mic, and tells Shane Douglas he was in the wrong place at the wrong time, and then just tells Russo, I'm in the building. It's like, oh, okay. This was kind of a shame that the big bump was overshadowed.
I know.
Yeah, we kind of just moved on from it so quick.
The big bump looked so good. They even tried to do a thing where, like, the bump was so hard that you could see Crowbar's eyes rolling in the back of his head, but the lighting was so bad you couldn't really tell. Like, it could have been a cool moment if they'd fucking lit that area.
I still don't get why Shane Douglas and Crowbar were fighting. Like, they've not done anything with that.
Right.
But, yeah, Goldberg is continuing to come for Russo, but he can't touch him per his contract or he'll be fired. So
nothing makes sense.
Let's go backstage. We get Kevin Nash going to take a shower. And
so they tried to get, like, a shot of Kevin Nash going into the shower. He's in the bathroom. He goes back to, like, into the actual shower. They put a blur spot over his ass. Yes. There's, like, a circle of blur.
Yes. Because if they had done pixelation, this might have been fine. But it was literally just a circle.
You can see on the outskirts of the circle.
What? Kevin Nash threw that ass in a circle.
Throw that ass in a circle. You can see on the little outskirts of the circle a beige undergarment of sorts.
Yes.
He's wearing boxers. He's wearing bottoms.
Yeah.
Because as this continues, Kevin Nash goes into the shower. He has a guest. Booker decides he wants to come join Kevin in the shower.
Okay, well, Booker grabs the WCW title and hits Kevin Nash from behind in the shower. And I think Mark Patton's like, it's like Oz. And I'm like, ooh.
It's like Oz?
The show Oz, the prison show.
Oh, well, yeah. Double meaning.
And yeah, Kevin Nash is laid out supposedly naked, but
supposedly, yeah. But very much not naked.
Oh, so God. Yeah, Kevin Nash has been taken out. Elsewhere, Vince Russo asks Scott Steiner for help. Steiner just kind of says no and threatens Russo if he touches him again.
Appreciate that.
We then get a graphic for 2 weeks from this Nitro on the September 11th Nitro.
What's happening on September 11th?
It is going to be the wedding of Miss Hancock, not Stacy, Miss Hancock, and David Flair. And this will take place in Charlotte. So maybe Ric Flair will be back?
Oh, sounds like a disaster.
Let's go into a match that it's just kind of happening, but I was fine with it. It's Jeff Jarrett versus Vito.
Yeah, unfortunately, this is probably the best worked match we're going to get on the card. It doesn't make any sense as to why it's happening, but it's good. It's welcome.
Jarrett plays the crowd, so Vito does Italian hands.
Hey, yo, wait.
Vito hits a power slam and works Jarrett over in the corner. Jarrett hits his Memphis punches, but runs into a reverse atomic drop and is sent to the floor. Vito hits a mafia kick in the ring and gets him out. And hits arm drag and a leg drop. Vito hits a suplex and a diving elbow, but Jarrett kicks out. Vito catches a kick, but Jarrett hits an enziguri and goes for the stroke, but Vito counters and hits a spinning back suplex. Vito then hits a diving headbutt, but Jarrett kicks out, so Vito goes for a Pison plant, but after some countering, Jarrett hits a stroke and gets the pin. I may have, like, not noted everything in that match, but, like, it was actually a good match.
It was actually a surprisingly good match. They had, like, a little back and forth segment at the very end there that was just so smooth and so refreshing. My note here is, like, this is definitely the best match on the card so far, probably because they're both wrestling.
Yeah, wait, hold on. You're telling me that if you put two guys who can actually work and don't put any interference in the match, it turns out okay?
Sometimes. What? Yeah, I know. It's a crazy concept. Vince has never been told that, though.
Yeah, who would have thunk?
Who would have thunk it?
Backstage, Jeff Jarrett goes for his truck of guitars, but Mike Awesome is hiding underneath the guitars and attacks Jeff Jarrett and then slams Jarrett onto the bed of guitars.
Mike Awesome just pops out and goes, bleh!
Which means he likely would have needed help to make sure he was, like, hidden.
Yes, he needed help getting under all of those guitars. You know how that helped him? Crowbar. I think Crowbar would help him. Before, earlier.
Maybe he was a fat chick.
We don't... Maybe. One of the thrillers. We don't know how long Mike Awesome has been sitting in there. We don't know. Has he been there for an hour since the beginning of the show? Was he there in the first shot? We don't know.
He did wrestle a match.
Oh, true. Good point. So after that match, he would have snuck in. Crowbar was still fine at that point.
So with that, Jeff Jarrett has been taken out as well. So there's very little help left for Russo. We then get the Natural Born Thrillers coming out to the ring. Emily, can you name all the Natural Born Thrillers?
Mike Sanders.
Yes.
Reno.
Yes.
Sean O'Hare?
Yes.
Jindrak?
Yes.
How many are there?
I think there's only two more.
Chuck Palumbo?
Yes.
I'm missing the last one. I don't know.
He's the one on commentary for this match.
I said Sean Stasiak.
No, you said Sean O'Hare.
I said Sean O'Hare.
Yeah,
I meant to say Stasiak.
You said the other Sean.
Perfect Sean.
Yeah, so they come out to the ring. Mike Sanders calls out the Filthy Animals, and they want a 5-on-5 elimination tag match. So, of the five for the Filthy Animals, it's all of them, but Tigress is Tigress, and Conan's still hurt.
He's still hurt?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
He tore his triceps, and it's been longer for us than for him, but,
yeah,
you know.
I feel like somebody in the Filthy Animals has been hurt for the last, like, calendar year.
Yeah, it's definitely been rotating. So, I guess it should be noted, Tigress is working double duty tonight.
Yeah, good for her. She's putting in that work.
I know, that first match was so taxing.
Hey, she's up there for MVP. She's putting more work than anybody else right now.
The Filthy Animals are also all, like, wrestling in street clothes. It was kind of weird.
Yeah. That's what's making Who's That Pokemon so difficult. Because nobody's coming out in, like, gear. Everybody's just in jeans.
As mentioned, Sean Stasiak's on commentary. I didn't really get anything from him during this.
No. I didn't even recognize that he was really there, except for the fact that the camera cut to him.
Palumbo overpowers Hoovy, but Hoovy counters with a Hurricane Rana and hits a suplex. Hoovy tries for a dive, but is caught by Palumbo for a last call. Palumbo locks in a torture rack as commentary starts talking about Paul Orndorff.
Yeah, he does, like, bring up Mr. Wonderful for some reason.
He would be working in the power plant, so these guys would have been training under him. Oh, I know. Okay. He wrestles at one of the upcoming pay-per-views. It might even be Fall Brawl.
Oh.
Unfortunately, I know he wrestles because he gets severely hurt during that match.
Oh, no.
To the point where, like, the match stops and he doesn't wrestle again.
Ever?
Yeah. Or damn. I'm pretty sure. He might wrestle, like, a nothing match, like, 10 years later. Damn. A little, like, yeah, but he's basically done. So we have that to look forward to.
Yay! Can't wait.
Hoovy hits a face buster on Reno, followed up with a springboard leg drop. Reno hits a gut wrench suplex, but Jindrak misses a follow up moonsault. Disco hits a messy elbow drop and walks into a tilt a whirl slam. Mark Madden notes that Disco has officially changed his name to Disco.
But not Disco. It's Disquo?
It's spelled like that. It's meant to be like Cisco, the artist. We've noted this before, yeah. But it has officially happened now.
Disco's changed his name to Disco. That's a line.
It's a homonym.
Sure.
Not even.
It's stupid is what it is.
Disco hits a last dance and Ray goes for a Bronco Buster, but Palumbo just comes in to cut him off. Guess that's fine.
Sure.
Everyone kind of comes in to take each other out. Like, the in-ring action in this match is good. It just failed to have any psychology.
Yes, that. Any purpose.
We end up with everybody on the floor except for Tigress, Mike Sanders, and Hoovy. Because Mike Sanders just watches Hoovy come in and run the ropes and hit a dive onto everybody on the floor.
Right.
Somehow, and I really want you to think about the logic of this, because this is an elimination match. No one's been out yet.
Yes.
The referee counts to 10, and everyone who was fighting out there has been counted out.
Not the ones that were legal in the match at the time. Everyone.
First off, good point.
Yeah.
That is point number one. Two, Hoovy just dove from in the ring, so he's not been out there for a 10 count.
True. He did not. Yeah. He's only been out there for like a 2 count.
So, but yeah, that's just not how any of that works. Although, I think there have been Survivor Series matches where I think it's been like they get DQ'd. I don't know that it's been they get counted out.
Mm. But that would have made sense. If it was a DQ, that would be fine.
Or if like they were all clearly leaving the area and it's like, okay, well, you guys are all gone, so let's just cut at the chase on this. Like, no, they were just at ringside.
Right.
So we're down to Tigress and Mike Sanders.
Oh, no. This isn't going to end well.
Tigress slaps Sanders, low blows him. She hits a face full of stuff, but it just rejuvenates Mike Sanders.
Why don't we just call it a Bronco Buster?
I don't.
Why does it got to be called a face full of stuff?
Yeah. Mike Sanders hits a 3.0, which is the Randy Orton backbreaker, and that gets him the win.
Honestly, good on Tigress for trying, though. She didn't just, like, cower away and be like, no, I'm just a little lady. No, she fucking tried.
Yeah, she has some presence. I'll give her that.
Good on her.
This was a fucking mess.
Yeah.
Which sucks, because, again, the in-ring action of this was good.
Yeah.
But
it was stupid.
Yeah, the fact that we were going all that, like, that long, and I'm like, this is an elimination match? What the fuck?
Jeff Jarrett and Vito the only match that hasn't had some, like, screwy finish so far tonight?
Let's see. Let's go back.
Because I'm counting the Kevin Nash and Booker T finish as screwy.
3 count versus Dark Carnival didn't have a screwy finish in the match. It happened after the match.
Fair. Okay.
So there is that. Paisley versus Tigress versus Major Guns was clean.
No, it wasn't. it got recalled. Yeah. No, that was messy.
Scott Steiner, Mike Awesome had interference. The Prisoner of War match had interference. Kevin Nash, Booker T, enough said. Yeah, seems that way.
Damn.
So yeah, well, I'm guessing we're going to have some group of these guys at the pay-per-view, yeah. But I don't know what it's going to be. We go backstage. Goldberg has killed Scott Steiner off camera with a pipe.
Sick.
I'm guessing this was done so that, like, we didn't have to actually do anything with Steiner, have him risk hurting his face more.
Yeah.
Because we just, like, go around the corner to see that Goldberg has used a pipe to, like, shatter a bathroom window.
Yeah.
And Steiner is laying there. So Russo is out of guys to help him, so he goes to ask Vito for help, and Vito gives Russo the Italian kiss of death. Mark Madden is very confused by this. Tony clocks it pretty quickly. And
does Russo clock it?
No.
As it happens to Russo, I feel like he kind of was confused, and he's like, okay, let's go this way.
Yeah. I guess I missed that Vito was going to go with Russo, because Russo comes out, and Vito's with him, and I'm like, wait, but...
Can you describe the kiss of death? Because I've never actually seen The Godfather in this sense.
It's just like a mafia thing of... Like a goodbye kind of thing, because you're about to die.
Oh, okay. This is making plans for Christmas.
Yeah. Russo tells Goldberg this is his show, and he calls him out. Goldberg comes out, and Russo says Goldberg can't lay a finger on him, but gets scared by Goldberg barking at him. I think it's Tony Schiavone on commentary. The fucking patronizing. This is real life, fans. Is it? Is it, Tony?
It's Tony's real life.
Just say, this is my life, fans.
Ladies and gentlemen, my career.
Russo begs Goldberg to hit him so he can fire him. Instead, Vito takes out Russo with the stickball bat as Goldberg watches. I'm like, oh, so I guess Vito's fired.
You would think.
Yeah. Again, Booker not fired last week. Vito probably not fired this week. Goldberg tells Vito to take out the garbage, and Vito carries Russo to the back as commentary just kind of kills time.
Commentary calls this a bald-headed conspiracy.
Yes.
Which I did kind of think was funny.
Let's go to our, I guess, main event match. It is The Great Muta versus Sting.
Why is this the main event?
Well, commentary tries to put over, like, the rich history these two had, like, 10 years ago.
Sure.
So maybe that's
why is this the... We had a title change. We had a world title change.
Never mind. I'm remembering why this gets the main event later.
How much time is left on the card at this point?
Like 7 minutes, maybe?
We come back from commercial and there are 9 minutes. The bell rings and there are 5 minutes.
I don't remember hearing the bell ring, because, like, they just brawl on the ramp, heads towards the stage, they stay on the ramp, keep brawling around ringside. I don't think they go in the ring at any point. The
bell might not have rung. You might be right.
So technically, that would make the Elimination Tag Match the actual match main event.
My God.
Sting hits a chair to the back, and Sting keeps dominating Muta. Muta hits a back kick, and then they go back up the ramp. Vampiro and the ICP then come through the big, like, Turnertron. Like, they cut a hole in it, which is like, oh, that's why this is the main event, because they're destroying the Tron,
yeah.
Which, they're losing money. Why are you doing that?
I'm saying.
So they come to the Tron, and some, like, smoke pyro goes off, like, very kind of casually. Vampiro hits a very lame, safe dive from the truss onto Sting.
I think the goal of that was for the fog to distract Sting and Vampiro to take that distraction time to jump onto Sting.
Yeah.
But Vampiro was like, I can't see where I'm landing with this fog. I'm not jumping. Well, he waits for the fog.
Also, people would be able to see the dive.
Yeah, that too. He waits for the fog to dissipate and then, like, very carefully hops down.
Yeah, it's like he very much puts his hand on the truss and kind of, like, vaults. And...
Yeah. It's safe. I'll give him that.
Oh, he's also holding a kendo stick with this. Vampiro hits more kendo stick shots as Muta hits kicks. Sting powers up and he and Vampiro brawl on the stage and then climb up the Tron. And ICP grabs Sting up there and he gets stomped out. We don't get to see the end of this because we cut to the desert. And Emily, who is just... Hold on. I guess before I ask this... One, they did not have no fucking time to get out to wherever this
is. Again, we are in less than 3 minutes at this point.
It's also broad daylight.
Yes.
And it's New Mexico, so this would still have been like 7 p.m.
Yeah.
Goldberg is there with the shovel. I don't know where the hell they are, but who just pulls up?
What do you know? Bret Hart.
Fucking why?
That's verbatim. That's the line that Goldberg says as Bret Hart pulls up in a car behind Goldberg pulling Russo out of this truck.
Yes.
Huh? What do you know? Bret Hart.
And Hart's here because he wants revenge on Russo because of Montreal.
Yeah, Russo did more damage to Bret Hart and his reputation, his career, than he did to Goldberg's. So I should be the one to get this hit in, brother.
So Goldberg gives Bret Hart a shovel. Hart almost immediately hits Goldberg with the shovel.
Swerve.
And yells at him for ending his career. Jesus Christ, guys.
The band's back together.
And that's the show. That's the whole fucking show.
That's how we go off the air.
Fucking Bret Hart and Goldberg in the desert.
Hey, remember when we did our desert angle last time?
Leading to a match that's never going to happen.
The band's back together.
Are they?
I mean, I don't know.
This was a terrible show.
This was so bad.
That I honestly think could have been better. I really do. Because, like, look, the matches on paper should have been fine. The problem is when you just write them down and cease to give a shit after that point.
Yeah.
That's when we're running into issues.
Yeah. Like you said, they don't actually care about the match. They just care that they have a show on air. They don't want it to be a wrestling show at this point.
Yeah, like, they are basically doing universe mode and just hitting simulate for all the matches.
Oh, yeah.
Playing through any of them. It's like, all right, well, we've done this now. That'll kill 3 minutes.
Yep.
Oh, I'm so ready for fucking Russo to leave.
We're getting there, right?
Yeah. The problem is, I know once he leaves, they're like, oh, well, we think he's coming back, so let's just kind of keep doing pseudo Russo for like 3 months.
Amazing.
So I don't know when I don't know when things are going to get better, but I don't know that they do.
Well, we only have, what, 9 months left of this company being a company?
7.
Damn.
Yeah, it's
we're coming down to the wire, folks.
And with that, any closing thoughts on the show, Emily?
What a fucking show.
Yeah.
Nick, we've been doing this podcast for 5 years. This is what we do with our lives. This is the shit that we watch.
4.5.
Fair. 4.5 years. We spend our Saturday watching this. We have 2 days off from work, and we spent 1.5 hours of one of them watching this shit.
And then another 1.5 hours.
Recording, talking about this shit.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
You want to just bring us home?
Let's do best bit, worst bit, and MVP.
All right, Emily, what do you have for your best bit?
The only match that was a wrestling match, I guess. Jeff Jarrett and Vito.
That's, I get the same thing.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, are we going to be 3 for 3 on samesies?
Well, I'm torn on the MVP, so I kind of doubt that.
Okay. What is your worst bit?
The women's match.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew that one we would agree with. And it's not the women's fault. It's really not. I really don't think it's the women's fault that that's the worst bit. It's production's fault.
I mean, I'm going to stick with them. But man, that Chronic Harris Brothers match was really giving it a run for its money.
Pretty bad.
Emily, it's time. Who do you got for MVP?
I'm torn between two people, both of which I feel like you can guess for me.
I'll tell you mine while you sort it out. I think his moment got overshadowed, so I couldn't do best bit, but Crowbar took a hell of a bump, and I'm going to give him MVP for that.
He sure did.
Because no one else stayed that bump.
No, and you wouldn't ask anybody else to. Honestly, Crowbar probably volunteered.
Yeah.
He's like, I'll do it.
TV time, yeah.
TV time. I think I'm going to give my MVP to Vito again.
Yeah.
Yeah. He stuck up to the man.
Had a good match.
He had a good match. He said fuck you to Russo.
Taught Booker how to play stickball.
He's a good man. Close second was Tigress. I did have Tigress on the shortlist because, like, once she fought in the fucking match against Mike Sanders, like, she tried. She did her shit. And she did technically win that women's match. Technically.
I'm moving on.
If I'm going to give it to a woman, if I have an opportunity to give it to a woman, I'm going to give it to a woman.
Well, if you want to go through our back catalog to see how many times Emily has given MVP to a woman, because I don't know how many it would be. Probably
not many in WCW.
Yeah. But you can still have our back catalog everywhere podcasts are found, except for SoundCloud. You can also follow us on social media at Butts in the Pod and some other spots as the Butts in Seats podcast. And then over on the Patreon, we just put out King of the Ring 1995.
Woo! Yeah. Happy fucking birthday.
As a reminder, the shows could always be worse.
It's true.
And then we're about to resume our watch through of the new Monday Night Wars in TNA.
Let's go.
But $5 a month over at patreon.com/buttsintheseats. You get almost 30 bonus episodes over there.
Let's go.
And yeah, it's a lot more crossover with WCW than you'd think in those TNA days.
Honestly,
it's not just Hogan and Bischoff.
No, unfortunately, there's a lot more. We've also got some WrestleMania write-ups that I'm still working my way through. I just posted WrestleMania 17. WrestleMania 19 will be coming up fairly shortly after because we've already talked about 18. And Nick also has a write-up that he may or may not have posted at this point.
Yep, it'll be out by now.
I
said we're going to do Starrcade 94, and then we decided against it. So I'm like, let me do that in a write-up form. So
yeah.
a little thing over there. It's a little bonus.
We have fun on the Patreon. We try to keep it a little bit lighter over there. Because this all sucks.
Emily, any closing thoughts? You want to just escape this?
Let's be done with this. Let's get this out of our brains.
Define this, all of it? Well, on that note, I'm Nick.
I'm Emily.
Thanks for listening and bearing with us here at the Butts in the Seats podcast.
Bye.